Welcome back to Creative Therapy Umbrella. This is a place where we talk about all different types of creative arts therapies, expressive therapies, and creative approaches to therapy. I am beyond excited about today's episode because I have been searching for someone to come on to talk about poetry for so long. And when I got connected with Carly, my heart just melted with how sweet and how thoughtful she is about the work that she does. And I'm just so excited to have her on the podcast so you can hear all of the awesome things that she does. So in this episode, Carly tells us a little bit about her own journey with falling in love with poetry and how powerful this medium can be as a healing agent. While in graduate school, Carly focused one of her capstone projects on creating a social media platform called Poems for Patients, and you can follow Carly there on Instagram and on Facebook. And she used this platform to connect others to poetry, starting in waiting rooms, and now it's moved to social media and just such a wonderful platform of uplifting others' voices. She also shares in this episode so much information about the different ways that poetry can both passively and actively support others. I learned so much sitting down and talking with Carly, and it was just such an enjoyable time. I hope you guys enjoy this episode. Stick around on the other side for an announcement from Creative Therapy Umbrella, and enjoy the episode. Okay, Carly, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thank you so much for inviting me on.
I am just so excited to have you on. It is such a pleasure to be here with you. So thank you for taking the time to talk to us and share everything that you do. I'm really excited to dig into it.
Me too. Thanks.
Yes. Well, for our listeners, can you tell us a little bit about what you currently do?
Sure. So I'm a recent clinical social work grad. I graduated through this pandemic in May, and I went to the University of New England in Portland, Maine for social work. And I chose that program because they have a creative arts and social work practice concentration where I could really learn and try on a bunch of different creative arts modalities. So, you know, that being said, I am new to the field. I'm an emerging clinician. And, you know, going through this process through the pandemic, but I'm really excited to, you know, find my place in the professional arena, doing creative arts and expressive arts therapies with children and their families.
That is awesome. And so many props to you for graduating and being flexible through this time. I feel like you're the cohort of students that had to graduate, figure out internships, all of that stuff during this. You guys have had so much thrown at you, and I'm just so impressed by how well you have all just kind of traversed these changes and are like, okay, I'm gonna do this, let's do it.
Thank you so much for saying that, because there's a sense of safety with being a student, even though it makes being a student really hard during these times. And now that I don't have that sense of safety as a student, you know, just trying to find our place into the field when there's all of these barriers has been really challenging. But, you know, we learn all of these skills in our clinical programs that we should also be utilizing as clinicians or future clinicians. So it's been a healthy reminder to practice what we preach.
Yes, definitely. And it's just, I think it's so cool, especially to look at the positives, like looking at those positives as you come out and, you know, being flexible and all of those things and sitting with the pain of it at first and all of the changes that it's brought. But I feel like as clinicians, you guys are going to be so much more prepared for having to traverse this hurdle at the very beginning of your professional career.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yes. Well, so you just got your degree in social work and have so many exciting things, but there's one really, really interesting thing that you did with your thesis. Can you tell us a little bit about the start of Poems for Patients?
Sure. So, like you said, I run a social media account called Poems for Patients. And that started as my research project in my clinical social work program. And I'll tell you a little bit of how that started. I got to thinking about my own experience dealing with an illness as a child. So there's a lot of personal inspiration of why I started that page. But then I also worked as a medical receptionist for 4 years in my undergrad program and observed a lot of the students who were patients coming in and complaining about the waiting room experience and how boring it was and how stressful it was. So when I got to graduate school, I was thinking about my own personal experience and this professional experience. And I thought back to my personal experience of what got me through my illness as a child. And that was poetry. And it was reading poetry and it was writing poetry all day, every day. I was immersed in it and it supported me so much. It got me through that and, you know, other things in life as well. And so I thought, okay, how can I combine these two situations, my love of poetry and figuring out how it could somehow make a patient or somebody experiencing the medical environment feel a little bit better. And so I had that kind of question in my mind and started my literature review process and found some information or research studies that had incorporated poetry in the medical arena. But really, there's not a lot. And so that made me curious as to how I could start doing that. And so my Poems for Patients project started as a pamphlet to actually place in a waiting room environment. Because, you know, there's magazines on the table, but who actually picks those up? So I wanted to bring in something with hopeful themes to make the experience a little more positive. So I found some famous poems, put them in a pamphlet, made it pretty, and had a survey there to measure, does reading these poems, will that reduce somebody's stress if they're presenting with stress in the waiting room environment? Because people can be stressed about what lies ahead, the unknown. They're obviously there because something's up in their life and that's worrisome. They could also be stressed because our healthcare system in the United States is filled with problems. And one of those is that it takes forever to get seen. And people have to cancel plans. And those plans often involve work, which helps them survive in the world. So there's all of these layers of stress that could be contributing to someone's experience as they're waiting there. My goal was to reduce that through positive poems, and I didn't gather a lot of data, so I couldn't necessarily draw a super concrete conclusion, but from the data that I did have, I had the pattern of, yes, it is reducing stress to some degree, and that inspired me to think creatively of how I could continue doing poems for patients. And so in my creative arts and social work practice course, we had a macro project to do. And I thought, how could I bring this research project at a macro level to promote social change? And that's when I made an Instagram account called Poems for Patients. And I've been doing it for a little over a year now.
Awesome. That is such a beautiful story. I think it's always touching to hear how personally people become involved in something, you know, they want to start and they have their own personal experiences that they bring into it. It becomes really powerful, I think, when then, and then the ripple effect that that has of starting something small in a program and starting in one waiting room. And now this has moved to a macro level and it can just continue to serve other people on a huge level.
Yeah, that's definitely what I hope I can continue doing. And I think every person, no matter what their clinical field is, whether they're a psychologist or an LCP or a social worker and so on, we're all taught that our own life experiences are going to impact the work we do. And so with that, you know, there's the constant checking our biases through practicing reflexivity and, but still listening to that, you know, that little piece in your heart that inspires you to do the work that you do. So I think that there's so many important layers for doing this kind of work where there is a personal inspiration.
Yes, absolutely. And where with Poems for Patients, as it's starting to grow and serve more people and it's perpetually growing, where do you hope that that continues to grow and where do you kind of hope that it goes in the future?
Yeah. So my goal from day one with the social media aspect of Poems for Patients has always been to center other people's voices, to empower them, and also to give them the chance, if they choose to share their story in this way on this platform, to bring about social change by educating others and bringing about awareness of a certain health condition that they're either experiencing in their own life or maybe somebody that they love is. And so they want to practice advocacy by writing a poem about, you know, whatever it may be. And so I really hope that I can continue to center other people's voices and therefore receive submissions of poetry or any kind of writing related to a health situation or a social justice situation. But when I don't have submissions coming in, I gotta think creatively. So sometimes I might share my own poetry on there. But again, this platform is truly meant to center other people's voices and empower other people. So I'm always, always trying to be careful and mindful of, if I'm going to share my poetry, how can I do it in a way where, if I am centering my voice in the poem, how is that related to a larger level social situation or social justice concern? So that's kind of what I do when I don't get submissions, or I do my research, because I don't know if people realize this, but content creation takes a lot of energy in order to be thoughtful. And so if there's a social justice topic or a health situation that I want to advocate for, but I don't have submissions, I'll do my research not only on, you know, that topic, but also what poem could relate to it, what poet relates to it. And so it takes a lot of time, and it's taught me to have all the more respect for content creators, because you know, I didn't go to school to study this. I went to school to study clinical social work. And here I am trying to, you know, brand a social media page and market mm-hmm. it so that it reaches a larger audience. So, yeah, I have to think creatively a lot in that regard.
Yes, yes. There's so much that goes into and I think when, especially when you're, one of your goals is to, you know, bring it to reach a far audience so that you can support who needs the support. It is so, all those other things that come with it. I know I didn't realize it.
Yeah.
Like, whoa, all this stuff. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Okay, so you mentioned how writing can be so impactful with health, mental health, mental wellness, and in two different arenas, in the kind of medical environment as well as for social justice and social change. Could we dive into, let's first dive into the medical environment and how you spoke on that a little bit already, but how can writing impact and promote change and promote health in medical environments? Or how have you seen that or experienced that in any way?
Sure. So there's the aspect of writing in itself and then also reading. So when I think of reading, for example, I compare it to artwork on the walls. You know, everybody's very intentional about what kind of art is on the walls, or if there's sounds, what kind of music, is it ambiance? So it's kind of the same thing when, you know, people want to put writing of poetry on the walls, or, you know, on a side table or anything of a medical environment. And and writing usually tends to be either as a group exercise or as individual. And the power of writing with a client and a clinician really lies in self-determination of the client to choose to engage in that. So it's never a, you know, never a power position on the clinician who decides to invite the client to see if that's something they'd like to try out. It's always posed as an invitation. And it can be more open-ended. So it's never, you know, here's a prompt and you write about it now, because that's intimidating, right? And so it's really utilized as a way to communicate. But if that person chooses to communicate that way, because we don't want to suddenly become a language arts teacher that somebody, you know, has some scary thoughts and feelings about from whatever past experience they have. And so if it's done in that appropriate and ethical manner, then that's when both the clinician and the client or the patient can really see the positive implications of it, which include, you know, building that therapeutic alliance, because it's a way to share your thoughts and educate somebody else on your own feelings. And then through that, the long-term effects of it are the reductions of stress, of anxious feelings, of depressive sadness feelings, and also self-concept can increase, because if you are invited to participate in something that you choose to be empowering, and that involves sharing a story by letting somebody read it on paper or letting somebody hear it through your words, how much confidence can be built through that, which can lead to that positive self-concept and self-esteem?
Yeah, absolutely. I love the emphasis that you placed on that client-centered approach of if a client chooses to express themselves in this way,
that's when it can be most powerful and most therapeutic versus kind of coming from that power standpoint of, okay, let's do this thing next. That can be intimidating and may not really get you to where you're hoping to get in that relationship.
Exactly. And it, and if it's done incorrectly like that, you know, that's perpetuating harm and not supporting the person that is there to benefit from whatever kind of service that or intervention that is taking place in that moment. So it's never, you know, pointing the finger at anybody and saying, well, I know that you experienced this, so can you write a poem about it? That's definitely not the way that it works.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, because it's, I feel like I'm getting nervous just thinking about it. Like, whoa, I would be so, it would feel so on the spot, especially when, and like you had mentioned, kind of this is the active part of poetry, like making a poem or sharing a poem, that can be so, you can feel so vulnerable in that space and how damaging that could be.
Exactly. And there's also a lot of privacy with poetry. Some people really, really connect with their poetry in a private manner. And I'm one of those people that loves to write, but I don't necessarily love to share it with, you know, my loved ones or the world or anyone. It's therapeutic for me to write it out and just sit with it with myself. So there's always that aspect of poetry being a very private experience to some degree for a lot of people. So, you know, if that's the case for specific people, then it can be an invitation on their part to use that as a coping skill on their own. So how can the clinician help that client or that patient, this individual, feel empowered in their own ability to engage in writing or writing a poem and reading poetry on their own when they're not in the session with the clinician?
Yeah, that's such a powerful reminder of how much impact the personal relationship with the art form that somebody might have is still very therapeutic, and it doesn't necessarily have to be shared to promote some sort of wellness in conjunction with a therapist.
Yes, it's always about what feels right. So if it feels right to keep it private, and that's what is, you know, part of the healing process and in creating coping skills for whatever's going on, then that's what needs to be done. But if it feels right to share it with others, then, you know, all the more power to people who make either choice, because in both situations, there's a lot of empowerment. There's empowerment with saying no, thank you, and empowerment with saying yes.
Yeah, absolutely. That is such a fantastic way to frame it, of the empowerment of saying no, because that is so important to honor in clients, of like, you can say no. And something that kind of popped in my mind too is I would think that even if somebody was sitting with you as a therapist and creating poetry while you were there, and maybe they were writing it and it was very a silent kind of session and you were just there as support, even if they didn't share that, that's still such a powerful experience in the therapeutic relationship.
It absolutely is, especially since there's so much power in that silence in of itself.
Yes, yes. And holding that space as a therapist, just kind of being okay with not sharing and, you know, just being there to hold that space for a client.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. That's so, it's wonderful. The other thing that I think is really interesting that I've never really thought about before is that passive the, I guess, more passive impact of reading poetry that can be therapeutic as well. I think with music, it's always like, yeah, you can listen to music and, you know, read through the lyrics. But I never really think about it as much with reading and how that in itself is another powerful action to do.
Definitely. And that's another aspect of my page is, you know, empowering people, one, if they choose to share their experience through writing poetry, but also empowering other people when they see somebody who shared their writing to, you know, let them know you're not alone, that there's people experiencing this health situation. And so when somebody's reading that, I hope they feel less alone. I hope they feel like somebody recognizes them. I hope that they feel as if they can make the choice to share something if they choose. And if they make the choice of saying no in that empowerment, then just that act of reading it is part of it as well.
Yeah, I think that power of when you do see someone, you hear your own voice and somebody else's voice is so incredibly touching. I know that that's happened to me, especially with music, a million times when it's like when you hear a song and you're like, oh, that person is singing my feelings. How did they do that? That's me. Like, and you just connect on such a deep level to that. And how powerful that can be too with reading something that feels so close to your voice.
Yes. And then the other aspect of reading is people that aren't experiencing that specific health situation in the poem, they're gaining some knowledge. They're increasing their awareness of this situation that they might not know anything about, or they might have all of these preconceived judgments about it. And so that can help people break down their own biases and stereotypes that they've created for certain situations regarding mental health or health. And through that is education. So this person who's deciding to share their poem, or if I'm sharing a poem related to a health situation that's written by somebody famous who might have left this world, they're gaining awareness of something that is not talked about in everyday life because of the stigma or the stereotypes or those judgments. So as people read this who aren't experiencing any kind of health situation, what my hope is that their compassion has increased for whatever situation they read about, and then inspired to have those conversations with people in their life, or not be afraid to reach out to people that they might know experiencing this situation, and offering what they can and what that other person wants from them. And then also taking that even a step further and practicing advocacy on their own. So what can they do as an individual who's not experiencing this health situation or any health situation? How can they make the world a better place and a safer place for people who are experiencing these health situations or social justice issue?
That is, yes, the advocacy that last step of, you know, you can keep going with that idea and then be an advocate, even if you're haven't necessarily experienced that you can use the power of your own voice to advocate for others. That's so, so powerful.
Thank you. Yeah. Yes. I hope that's what I can continue to do throughout this this social media platform.
Yeah. And you touched on this a little bit at the end there, is that that larger social justice too. How do you see poetry serving as a vehicle for social change and for social justice?
Yeah. So first of all, I think social media has a lot of power to participate in social advocacy simply because it's in the palm of our hands. It takes no effort a lot of the times when you're on Instagram to learn something new. When you're on Facebook or, you know, any other type of social media, because things pop up for you. And so through that, that's really helpful for poetry because you can reach a large audience. Whereas if, you know, you posted it up on a poem printed copy and you did the old school staple it to a pole thing, how many people are going to be able to see that? A lot, hopefully, but not nearly as much. And so poetry has a really interesting history because poets have been advocating for social justice with poetry for years, for decades. But Instagram has actually brought poetry back. There's, you know, that hashtag poetry is not dead, because there was a long time where poetry just wasn't cool, quote unquote, or people thought that it didn't matter. But Instagram actually really brought that back, especially with young people. And there's a really interesting documentary on YouTube by Ariel Bissett, and it's called Hashtag Poetry. And it actually dives in to this concept of how Instagram kind of was the rebirth for poetry and the appreciation of it.
Wow, that is so cool.
Yeah, and there's also a book called You/Poet by Raina Hutchinson and Samuel Blake that provide a lot of prompts and information on styles of poems. But it also touches on this aspect of how Instagram increased the appreciation and awareness of poetry and helped other people realize that they can write poetry and they don't have to be a famous author that they learned about from 1902 that's in a textbook. You know, anybody can be a poet. Anybody can write a poem.
And thank goodness for, you know, I think with art forms, there's so much danger in how we can get lost in different things. And that's something like, you know, social media of Instagram and, you know, there's all of the negative things of connotations of being on our phones too much and all of this stuff. But there is also, it is also serving a huge, huge purpose in connecting us to those things, and especially to something, rebirthing something like poetry. And I can only imagine how many people are now connected with poetry that were never before Instagram, before they were on it or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And how those people are, you know, meeting individuals that they have a common bond with. That's something that I've experienced as I have been doing this page. I have met so many incredible people through this, whether they've shared a poem in a piece of writing with me that they would like me to post, or learning from poets that share their writing on their own page. And it's just incredible because you are hearing their poem or reading their poetry, and you know that they're a real human because they're just like you. And some really incredible accounts that I think people could really learn from, whether they're learning as somebody who who's not experiencing a health situation, or they are and they would like to feel less alone. Some of these accounts or people include Tonya Ingram, who is at Tonya Instagram. And Tonya lives with some health concerns and shares her life situations on her feed. And through that, she shares a lot of poetry. And another person that I have connected with that I really admire as well is somebody named Ari Kofur. And I apologize if I'm not saying their names right. I just read them all the time. I don't think I've ever heard their name said. But Ari is at a.b.kofer, C-O-F-E-R. And Ari is a poet that advocates for mental health awareness and shares a lot of poetry about her own life.
That's phenomenal. And I think with the arts, as people who are creative and who have these different creative pursuits, we know that, the arts are such a powerful vehicle for social change and for advocacy. But I think it's not something that's talked about as much. You know, we talk about the power that these things have, but for social change and for reaching people and for changing views and in so many different avenues in that way, I feel like the arts don't get the credit for those things as much as they should.
You're absolutely right. And right as they start to get all the credit that they deserve, you know, there's policies put in place about defunding the arts and, you know, for other arenas in the learning and professional environment. So what we can do as people in this field or emerging into this field is to not lose sight of those advocacy skills on a macro level. Especially as clinicians who are so focused on individual direct contact with people, we have to be really, really mindful of not losing sight of, you know, am I here in this space with this person so that I can be on their healing journey? Mm-hmm. Or am I there for that reason and to impact their lives on a greater level in society?
Yes. That connection between the two, that for therapists to remember both of those things is so important and so hard to do, you know, to be present, you know, that we holding that in our own minds while we're holding that space. But it is so, so important not only to be doing that on the individual, how can we serve this individual in the best way for them, but what other ways, like let's look at the outer layers of that onion and how can we keep this going out so it ripples out.
Exactly.
Yes. So how have you seen you've been interested in how the creative arts can impact your work in general. How have you seen the creative arts or creativity? How do you see its role within social work and social change and social justice?
Yeah. So I think the first thing that people think of with creativity is, oh, I'm not artistic, or I am artistic. But as a social worker, it doesn't always have to be that first off, because creativity also lies in when we are in a session with somebody and something's just not working. How can we think creatively as clinicians to try something different that the individual could connect with better? So that in itself is a creative process that, you know, should be happening every time you meet with somebody. So that's creativity, everyone. You are creative because that's what you do in your job. But then beyond
say it
that,
loud, loud.
And then beyond that comes the artistic question: am I artistic? Am I not artistic? But it doesn't have to have that approach, because that's about the product, and we don't care about the product. We care about the process. So. Yes. I just challenge anybody who is in this field to think a little bit differently about what their definition of creativity is, because it involves so much more than a product. And through that, it allows us to sit in discomfort and try new things. And, you know, we might explore what we do connect with and then what we don't connect with. But if we don't do that work in our own lives, how do we expect to implement that with individuals and promote that in their lives if we don't try it?
Yes, that it's so important to have our own understanding and connection with. I love how you explained that with creativity. It's not just about like, oh, I can pick up a paintbrush and I'm creative in that way, but creativity is so big. But the connection the relationship we have with it is so important, because it directly impacts our clients.
Exactly. And to the other part of your question about social justice, we got to make things engaging and interesting. So in order to get that change that, you know, we're fighting for any kind of cause, how can we engage people to change their thinking or feel inspired to implement change through voting or policies or conversations with loved ones? So, you know, that's where Instagram plays a large role in the way that social change can be created, because it, you know, the way that the image is created has a lot of ability to instill that inspiration. And so creating content, even if it's just an image with only words on it, there's a creative process with that, because you're trying to catch somebody's attention, and we need to catch their attention in an interesting and engaging way. And creative thinking and the creativity process directly impacts how they'll stay engaged with that.
Yes. And I love that you shed light on how that in itself is a creative process.
Yeah.
That, you know, finding the right images of all of that stuff takes so much creativity and, you know, failing and then finding the right thing. And that's all part of that creative process of trying something and it doesn't work. And how can we reframe that? And how we eventually usually land on the thing that works. And that's part of that process.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I'm curious how you stay connected with your own creative process separate from, you know, clinical work in the clinical realm, so that you can continue fostering that creativity when in a professional way. How do you do that for yourself personally?
That's a really important question. Thank you for asking that. I grew up in a family of musicians. My dad, his whole career has been singing and working in a band, playing instruments his whole life, other than when he was a grocery bagger boy when he was like 14. So I've seen that modeled for me through my whole life, which is really what helped me in come to the conclusion that I want to incorporate that into my work, just in a different way, in the therapy room and not on a stage. So it's just natural in me to want to do that. But again, it doesn't have to be anything that is, you know, quote unquote professional to engage in. Anybody could pick up an instrument and see what it feels like to have that instrument coming from at your fingertips. Anybody can pick up any kind of art material like paint. You can put it on your hands. You can put it on a paintbrush. So that's something that I have to remember, is that I'm telling people that, you know, this is something that you can incorporate in your life. So I have to do it too. And what I like to do is listen to other people's poetry, listen to other people's music. I love to play my own instruments, like the ukulele and the guitar. Yeah. And something that I've also been exploring is plants recently. I love getting creative with placing my plants around my house and figuring out, you know, the best layout in the pot if I have several plants. So, and cooking, that is something that's very important to me, is getting creative with food. So it's very important in my life that I practice that in my everyday life in various ways.
Thank you so much for saying that too. I just love how you pointed out your creative pursuits that are not necessarily always looked at as creative, but they're incredibly creative, like plants and gardening and cooking. Those are things I think people tend to never really think about, how creative they are and how creative you can be in those things, but they're so powerful.
Exactly. Yes. That touches on what we were talking about earlier too, is that creativity is not the answering the question of, am I artistic or am I not artistic? Mm-hmm. It's just really finding what speaks to you as an individual and listening to it and nurturing that, whether it be industrial kind of creativity, like woodworking, or it be, you know, the conventional thought of painting and drawing.
Yes, yes. And how I love the challenge of, you know, you can even go through your day and really think about all of the things that you do or that you can see around you that somebody else has done that have taken creativity, that require creativity of, you know, like you mentioned earlier, with even Instagram ads, like the person who put that together had to think about what color should the outline be and what picture is going to work best, which, let me throw a few of these things together and see which ones look better, feel better. And, you know, I'm at the gas station and, oh, this is a really creative logo. Or, you know, there's so many different ways that creativity is present in our lives.
Yes. And I think that everybody starts their day with creativity simply by waking up and thinking, what am I going to wear today? What am I going to eat today? How am I going to get to work today? Or what am I going to read today? That's all creativity.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I could put that quote on like that's like something to live by, that you wake up creatively. I love that so much. Yes. Oh my goodness. Well, as we are beginning to wrap up, I would love if you could tell our listeners where they can find you. If you can tell us a little bit about your anything, if it's email or in your Instagram account, anything like that, so our listeners can contact you and reach out to you.
Sure. So, again, my name is Carly Woolard, and I just recently graduated with my Master of Social Work. And you can find me at Poems for Patience on Instagram and Facebook. I have a link that you can click in my bio of Instagram that can take you to several places. And something that I'm going to be incorporating in there is a direct link that you can send your writing if you feel empowered to make that decision of sharing it with others to empower yourself, but also educate others about your situation. And the same thing for Facebook as well. And you can also email me at poemsforpatients@gmail.com. And again, this page is really about centering and amplifying other people's voices so that you can connect with other people. It doesn't just stop right there. People mm-hmm. are going to read a poem and want to know you better. And through that, making other people feel less alone and seen and heard is your power. So yes, I have this platform, but the people who decide to share their stories with this platform are the ones who are truly creating that social change and that positive impact on the world.
Yes, the community that can come from that.
Yes.
Yes. There will be, I will make sure to link to all of those things in our show notes, as well as the YouTube. You mentioned the YouTube channel earlier and a couple different books and Instagram accounts. So there will be links to all of those too, because those are fascinating resources. I can't wait to go watch that documentary.
Yes, I'm excited for you too.
Yes, it's so, I had no idea about Instagram kind of reigniting poetry, and I just can't wait to learn about it. It's awesome.
I'm excited for you to learn about it.
Me too. Thank you for sharing it. Well, Carly, this has been so, so wonderful having you on. I just want to thank you so much for sharing your passions, and thank you for what you do, for what you're bringing to the world. I am so excited to see where you go as a clinician. It's going to be amazing.
Thank you so much for those kind words, and also for what you do as well.
Thank you.
All right. I hope you guys enjoyed that episode with Carly. I had so much fun talking with her and love checking out. I follow her on Instagram and just love the things that she has posted. It has drastically opened my eyes to how powerful poetry can be. And I actually really love the idea of poetry and how it can be incorporated in music so much, and how much songwriting is so adjacent to poetry, and it's something I feel like I have wanted to learn more about for a long time, and Carly was able to give me a new perspective on it, so I'm so thankful for her. All right, I hope you guys enjoyed that episode with Carly. I learned so much from her in this one short episode. That documentary is now on my list of must-watch documentaries, movies. And I follow Carly on Instagram, and seriously, everything she posts, I am just so moved by. I think for me, for a long time, I didn't really realize how powerful poetry is and can be, and especially as she mentions with social justice. And I've just been doing a deep dive into learning more about that modality and medium, because it's just absolutely wonderful. So I'm so thankful for Carly for opening that door for me, and I hope she has opened it for others out there too. I'd like to thank you again for listening. I want to remind you that there is an anonymous survey in our show notes. So if there is something that you would like to let us know, whether it's a suggestion, a concern, any type of feedback that you want, that is there for you to use. So please use it. Also, always feel free to just email me too if you want to do it that way. creativetherapyumbrella@gmail.com. I love hearing from listeners. So send away and let me know your thoughts. Okay, for our special announcement. So behind the scenes at Creative Therapy Umbrella, we've been working on a lot of different things to support our community better. And when I started this podcast, one of the big things that I really, really wanted was for a community to be possible, a place where creative arts therapists could come together, learn together, develop new skills together, and talk to each other as creative arts therapists. And I am doing this in a one-way format of talking to other creative arts therapists and putting this out there as a podcast, but there's so many of you out there and everyone has so much to give in these creative arts conversations. So we are launching the Umbrella Community, and it's an online space and it's focused on learning, where you can learn about child mental health, trauma-informed care, development, creativity, and mostly too, how to support the emotional needs of children with and without disabilities. So this is a community where we have monthly group consultation calls where we focus on a particular topic that might be development one month, and then art and music in another month, and a bunch of different things throughout the year. And we come together and do a little bit of learning first, but then talking with each other as a community about how can we broaden these ideas and how can we apply the ideas and take all of the information that we're learning and bring it into our unique modalities. And so it's really exciting. If you're a music therapist, this can actually count for continuing education credits. It's pre-approved for 15 CBMT credits. You also get access to all of my resources on the website. You get, like, you're going behind the scenes on Creative Therapy Umbrella. So you're getting implementation videos, you're getting all the podcast downloads, you get all the newsletters, downloads, everything is in there, plus so much more. There's so many more things that are in there that haven't even been released to the public as well. And then also, as part of being the community, you'll get very, very steep discounts to any upcoming courses through Creative Therapy Umbrella. So it is a really cool place. I am so excited to continue to grow the mission at Creative Therapy Umbrella, to move from having something that is a one-week conversation between two creative arts therapists to making this something so much larger, where there's a bigger community, where we can come together and learn together and grow together. So I'm beyond excited about it. If you're interested in learning more, you can head over to the website. It's at creativetherapyumbrella.com/umbrella community. So, and that's also linked in the show notes. So that's a really easy place to get at it too. But so it is opening next week. It will open on September 23rd. So Wednesday, September 23rd. However, there are a lot of limited spaces because I do want this community to be intimate. And as much as I want it to serve as many people as possible, I also want to make sure that it's a safe space where we can come together and where we can have that one-to-one time, because we also get to do one-on-one consultations with me throughout the year too, which is really fun. So I can learn what it is you're looking for, and then I can plug that right into our resources. So you can hop on the website now and save your spot before the 23rd if you'd like to do that. That is absolutely available. And but it will actually go open and go on sale on the 23rd, and doors will close on October 5th. And we only open twice a year, and that again is to really make sure that we have that intimacy and that we can kind of learn as a cohort and grow together. And then, you know, in another 6 months, a new cohort can come in. And it's a place where I do really think that the emphasis on the community and learning together is really, really important. So I'm super excited about it. If you can't tell, I could talk about it for days. So if you have any questions about it, reach out, email me, head to the website, again, creativetherapyumbrella.com/the umbrella community. It's linked in the show notes. I am beyond happy to answer any questions. If you head to the website, you can actually get a little sneak peek in the resource library. You can click on a couple of the images and see what it looks like, what you get in that research library, what things you'll find. And then there's a bunch of frequently asked questions of the cost, what do the emails look like, what are the consultation calls like, all these different things. Is it just for music therapists? No. All these different things are listed on there. And if you have more questions, please reach out. I just want to thank you again for being a listener. You guys are just, I can't thank you enough. From the bottom of my heart, I am so thankful for you tuning in every time and listening to what we have going on here. So thank you so, so much. Sending you all the best and be creative.